Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, and I'm the host of the podcast When Football Was Football here on the Sports History Network. This podcast is based on stories, events, and characters from my book called When Football Was Football, The Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL, which was written shortly after the Cardinals won their last championship in 1947, or so it seems. The reason for this message is twofold. First, to share the great news that the second edition of the book has just been released by McFarland Publishers, and all Sports History Network listeners can now enter a special Sports History Network contest for the opportunity to win one of two free copies of When Football Was Football. We'll be happy to include a personal inscription in each winner's book and then send it out to you with our best wishes. The new book contains about 80 more pages than the original, almost all new archival photos, additions within all chapters based on new research, and an update on the players, coaches, and administrators mentioned in the book. It's everything you ever wanted to know about the early Cardinals, as well as the NFL itself. To enter this free giveaway, go to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you.
Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on a grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, Deft. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Is pick number 25 the NFL's best-kept secret? From the Super Bowl heroics of Santonio Holmes to the absolute dominance of nose tackle Ted Washington, this draft slot has quietly shaped the championship dynasties. But there's a catch. Since the AFL-NFL merger, not a single player from this spot has made it to Canton yet. Is that about to change? Today, we're counting down the legendary number 25s and seeing who finally might get the break of the Hall of Fame curse. Welcome to the Pigpen and Pigskin Dispatches podcast with Ed Cleese as our guest to go through these legendary players.
Hello, my football friends. Welcome back to the Pigpen. We are 25 days before the National Football League draft. We are covering all 32 days leading up to the draft, and we're covering the top 32 draft selections in the history of the draft. 90 years have gone by of the National Football League draft. Joining me today, as always during this journey, is Ed Cleese. Ed, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren, how are you?
I'm doing super, Ed. And, 25 is kind of a middle of the road of the draft selections for the modern draft. And what is your take on 25?
Well, Darren, the Bears have the 25th pick in this upcoming draft. And if they are paying attention to the history of this pick, they need to trade it. And they need to trade it fast. Because I was shocked when because I'm going back to 1980. And I was shocked at the lack of names, accolades. This is crazy to me, this list. This was borderline impossible to come up with the top five. To the point where I went, I probably spent more time on this one than any others we have because I kept going back, assuming I had to be missing someone. Because I kept going back and thinking, wait, what? And this is my number one? You know, and so I went back many times, and I'm pretty confident that I got it right. What could be a saving grace is that opposite of what we've talked about with some of these other picks, recently there are some draft picks that are off to pretty good starts in their career. Travis Etienne, Brandon Ayuk, who's got some off-field issues but is very talented and is going to land somewhere else this year. Tyler Linderbaum, who's a pretty big free agent right now, has had a pretty good career with the Ravens. Dalton Kincaid for the Bills looks really good. And then Jackson Dart was taken at this spot last year. So maybe this group of younger players will save the history of the 25th pick because it ain't pretty otherwise.
Yeah, no, you're looking at 1980. I can tell you it's not pretty before that either, because there has not been one Pro Football Hall of Famer taken at the 25th pick in 90 years. Well, and that's kind of unbelievable.
And nobody on my list is even considered for it, I would say. Not even on the radar. And for me, Darren, you know, I consider myself a pretty big historian here. And especially when it comes to the 80s and 90s, when I kind of grew up watching. But there are some of these guys that were drafted in the 80s. Vagas Ferguson, Billy Cannon, Emmanuel King, Scott Davis, Terrence Flagler. I've never heard of any of these guys. And I am a draft, an NFL nerd. And I was like, who is this? I'm clicking on them. And sure enough, they're in and out of the league like that.
Yeah, it's not the Billy Cannon that's in the Hall of Fame who was drafted about 4 decades earlier.
I clicked on him because I kept thinking maybe I got the wrong one. Yeah, so it was wild. Then we also have some quarterback busts too. You know, Tim Tebow was taken here in 2010. And, you know, a standout personality for sure, but obviously didn't have a very good NFL career. My team, the Redskins, took Jason Campbell in 2005. I wouldn't say that he was a total bust, but – certainly didn't pan out. Taking one pick before him in that same draft was Aaron Rodgers. So that kind of and there was a lot of rumors that Washington would have taken him had he fallen. So that's always been something that stuck with me. And then Tommy Maddox was taken as a quarterback in 1992 as well. None of those guys panned out at all.
Except he was the comeback player of the year.
Yes, for the Steelers, yes. But yes, certainly, yes.
The, not the for the big team. 21-point comeback against the Browns in the playoffs? Yes. And it was his injury that brought Ben Roethlisberger, rookie, off the bench and never looked back.
That's right. So not a great list, Darren.
No. Okay, so well, let's get into this top five.
Who you got? So these players are at least good. Number five, we're going to go back to 2012. I have Dont'a Hightower, a linebacker for the Patriots. Again, on paper, not a whole lot stood out. He did make a second-team All-Pro. He played in 17 playoff games, and he was the starter for the three. He started on all three of the Super Bowl winning teams in that last era of Patriots football. We talked about Devin McCourty in the last when we talked about pick number 26 or 27, I can't remember, but Devin McCourty was taken a couple years prior. And so he and Hightower were sort of like their best defensive players on those teams. A nice career. And that's all, that's all you can say, really.
Yeah. He was solid. Well, very well rounded, you know, decent against pass coverage, covering tight ends, earning, but he was a run stuffer and he was a great leader to have for a Belichick led defense in the middle.
Yep. And my guy at number four is on this list because of one play, and it's going to be a play that you remember and that you really like. And that would be Santonio Holmes, drafted in 2006 by the Steelers. Honestly, had a fairly pedestrian career. Certainly it's not a great pick. He was fine. He had a couple of decent years. He had one big year, I'd say. That was 2009, the year the Steelers won the Super Bowl. But he certainly had one big game. And if you are the Super Bowl MVP, that is something that's going to stick out and be remembered forever, and especially to punctuate it with one of the greatest catches we've ever seen to win the Super Bowl. So that's why I've got Santonio here. And I will point this out as well. He ended his career with the Jets. He was on the last Jets team, as long ago as it was now, to make the playoffs. And in that playoff run, he did catch two touchdowns for the Jets as well. So maybe a little bit of a big game player.
Yeah, and probably that catch at the end that scored the touchdown, that might not have even been his best catch on that drive. I mean, I think he made the majority of his catches on that final drive that the Steelers had. The big one was the fourth down play. Steelers were at their own 5-yard line. He caught one like the 24-yard line, which nobody will ever remember. But, you know, he drops that pass. You know, the Arizona has the ball inside the 10, you know, and probably is going to win that Super Bowl. So, yeah, but he got in a doghouse, too, just a couple years later. Steelers trade him for a 7th-round pick to the Jets.
Right. Yeah, so his career kind of flamed out quick. I like to tell my kids, you know, sometimes when is a lot more important than what. And Santonio did pick a very good time to have his best moments. So yeah. that puts him on this list.
All right. So who do you have above him?
Number three, we've got Xavier Rhodes, 2013, a cornerback drafted by the Vikings. Made a few Pro Bowls. He was a first-team All-Pro one time. He got some Defensive Player of the Year votes. I think he was in the top five in 2017. He was much more of a lockdown corner, kind of like the island corner. He didn't have a ton of interceptions. He didn't have a lot of flashy plays, but he was a really solid, really good, just lockdown corner. That side of the field is kind of shut off as long as Xavier Rhodes is doing it. Had he been able to do it for a little bit longer, he'd probably feel a little bit. I'd feel a little bit better about having him on this list. But he had a fairly short career overall, and his peak didn't maintain it for that long. But you know, he was a good player, probably better than good, and a really nice pick by the Vikings there.
Yeah, wasn't he just playing like a couple of years ago still?
I think he retired in like 2022.
Oh, was it? Okay, I thought I remembered him playing like in a playoff game maybe the year before.
I could have been wrong when I looked at it, but I think his career ended about 11 years, something like that.
Yeah, which is it's a pretty good long career for a DB. That's not too bad, not too shabby. Yeah. Okay. So who do you have above him?
This was tough, man. It's you're going to be like, this guy's number two. I've got John Beeson, a linebacker drafted in 2007 by the Panthers. And the reason I've got him there is because he just had an excellent start to his career. He was second in Defensive Rookie of the Year. Then he was first team All Pro in his second year. Then in his third year, he was second team All Pro. In his fourth year, he made the Pro Bowl. And then his career was kind of over. So he went from like this super top of the mountain. But Darren, after that fourth year, after that third year, I believe, third or fourth year, he became the highest paid middle linebacker in NFL history by the Panthers.
Really? Wow.
He suffered some serious injuries. He basically missed two seasons in a row, pretty much, after signing that deal. And at that same time, they drafted Luke Kuechly. So it's like he was on the mountaintop. He was considered like a premium linebacker in the NFL, got paid more than anybody else, got hurt. They drafted his replacement, and then it was over. He had one more kind of good year. He ended his career with the Giants. But he makes this list on the strength of four tremendous seasons, and then that was it.
Well, it's not too bad when your replacement is currently having his gold jacket sewn for his induction here in a couple months. So
Right. And that's going to bring us to number one, which you're going to be like, how can this guy be number one? But I had to pick somebody, Darren. So my number one is Ted Washington, drafted in 1991, defensive tackle and nose guard, really, drafted by the 49ers. And he had a 17-year career, so we'll start with that. He made the first team All-Pro team, Darren, at age 33, which is impressive, especially when you consider – he was a very traditional run stuffer. He was not a pass rusher. He never got more than 4.5 sacks in his career in any season. But he was a really highly regarded run stuffer, played for the 49ers. He played for the Broncos. And then he played 16 games for the Bills for six straight seasons. He started every game for the Bills for six straight years. I'm sorry, he missed one start, but he played in the game. So for six straight years, he started every but one game and played in all of them. Then he went to the Bears. That's where he had his All-Pro season, actually. Then he won the Super Bowl with the Patriots in 2003 as a starter. He started for them in the Super Bowl. Then he started all 16 games for three straight more years with the Raiders and Browns. So his stats don't jump out, but that's often not really the case. He was a pure old-school nose tackle. That's what he played, over center, on the guard, run stuffer, eat up space. And he did that exceptionally well for 17 years, and he was there every Sunday. And I think if you boiled it down to not defensive tackles, but if you just said, hey, take all of the true nose tackles in the history of the NFL, he's got an argument to maybe even be the best or in the running. He's in the conversation.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say because he was definitely a guy that would eat up two blocks on everything right. And free a backer up. So, yeah, that's doing your job up front.
If you keep getting jobs and you keep getting starts for 17 years, not everybody's wrong. You know what I mean? So he did something right.
Yeah, I have a feeling, you know, we talk a little bit about the lackluster of these selections, you know, your top five. You know, if we do this 5 years from now, that might totally change, you know, what you alluded to, because I think we've got some bright young folks that are coming into their own, possibly. You know, Dalton Kincaid is in that group. Tyler Linderbaum, you know, he may be on that list. Who knows what Jackson Dart's going to do? He's only a year in. And, you know, we might be able to talk about some other folks. We do this a few years from now.
They need it, because it's the history here is rough.
Yeah, it definitely is. Well, you know, if we look at the history of the pick, and if the history alludes to what we may see, we may be seeing a defensive back. We're back on that train of the DBs ruling the pick selection, because they had 15 selections of the 90 drafts have been defensive backs at pick number 25. You know, like we said, there's no Hall of Famers in this draft, or just a draft slot. And that takes us to our draft stat of the day. And the 2004 draft, which I'm sure you remember, the Ohio State Buckeyes had the most players drafted in a modern 7-round draft. They had 14 players taken in those seven slots, so 256 picks or whatever it is. 14 of them were Buckeyes. So that's our amazing stat of the day.
The Sean Taylor draft.
Sean Taylor draft, right, right. So that takes us down. We can mark another check in the calendar. And you know, when we come on tomorrow, we'll have 24 days left. And take a guess what position we'll be talking, or what draft slot we'll be talking about tomorrow. We'll let you guys do that for your homework. And, Ed, we will see you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.